You know, I got an email last week from someone who works in the public sector who says that he loves money talks, but he's also found that a bit strange. And, you know, actually, I get a lot of emails like that. Doesn't matter, public sector, private sector, union workers who are regular listeners. And why not? I mean, no matter where you work, getting on the right side of the major market trends is important. And let's face it, that's what I love about this. You can say I don't like me as a broadcaster, you don't like the show, don't like what I got to say. But you know what? In the end, it always comes down to the track record. I mean, we've been in the bull market literally since the first week. We called that March 2009, and I'm still a long-term bull. Never been shaken. We've been in the U.S. dollar since the loonie was over par, converted the money, and we've made a lot of people money. Thanks to Jim Dines, Mark Leavitt, gosh, we're going way back. We were the first in the marijuana stocks, right at the bottom. Then we sold within 10% of the top. And besides, I support unions, people's right to organize. But that doesn't mean you have to buy into what union leaders are saying. I make a big distinction between union elites and workers, and that's where I get in trouble. See, my allegiance is to the workers, and I couldn't care less about union elites. Although, I would like them to listen to money talks. I think it would do them some good. But I have no indication whatsoever that they do. On occasion, I get asked why I don't have them on the show. Now, think about it. Why would they want to do that? They do not have a research background to be talking about economics, finance, capital flows, investments, currencies. And it's very easily exposed. My over-under is 1 minute. It would take me less than a minute to expose that. So why would they want to come on? What I do that's been very unpopular, by the way, for decades, though, is to point out where union elites' policies prescriptions are absolutely at odds with the best interests of their members. And I thought, that's why I want to talk about this on the Labor Day weekend. For example, they continually push for higher taxes and more regulation. They rail against business profits. Come on, as if working in an unprofitable business are better for their members? Because we got lots of examples when business aren't profitable, what happens to their members? This is not some sort of ideological left versus right issue. In fact, that's where they go wrong. This is not politics. They can't wrap their head around it, and many of their supporters can't. This is economics. A lot of times it's just math, and it's common sense, backed up by a lot of research. I'll give you an example. A recent study by Canadian economists Kenneth McKenzie, Agreet Farid, conclude that wages in Canadian provinces drop by more than a dollar when corporate tax revenue is increased by a dollar. Similar conclusion to a study by the Federal Reserve economist Allison Felix, who reviewed data from 30 countries and concluded that a 10% increase in corporate tax rates reduces wages by 7%. Similar conclusion reached by economist Kevin Hazett, Aparna Mathur at the American Enterprise Institute, in a study of wages of manufacturing workers. There's a lot more research, but it's also common sense. When businesses have less money due to taxation or costly regulations, they won't be giving significant raises. But it also applies to public sector workers. I mean, ask yourself, is a raise more likely in a weak economy in a recession than in a strong one? Well, of course not. Some people think this is some sort of big right-wing versus left-wing deal, some big right-wing conspiracy. Well, I'll give you another example. Organized labor have been vehemently against free trade. Now, thanks to Donald Trump's tariff protection, though, you don't have to go far to see how disastrous that is for American workers and their families. There's so many easy examples now because there's layoffs. Average families looking to pay up to $1,000 more a year for Chinese goods when these new tariffs come into effect. Their opposition to free trade, which would have dramatically reduced economic growth, reduced jobs and government revenue, and hurt union and non-union workers. Yes, I point that kind of stuff out. One more example. One of the biggest challenges, one that we've talked about on this show regularly. Haven't heard them talk enough about it. But we've talked about it, and that's the security of pensions. I mean, I just think of the people in Nortel, Fraser Paper in the Maritimes, Catalyst Paper pensioners in BC, already been hit. We've already seen it with the Teamsters pension in New York, ran out of money. Dallas and police firemen who saw their pension benefits cut. Public sector workers in Chicago, maybe all of Illinois, are going to take a pension hit. This is going to be a big story because there's no shortage of private and public sector pensions in trouble. What union leaders can't seem to grasp is that this is about math, actuarial accounting to be more precise, and their anti-business, anti-capitalist agenda is hurting workers. To not understand that union pensions are invested in Canada's biggest corporations is just mind-blowingly ignorant. Every single pension Literally, you're part of a workplace pension. We're all part of the Canada pension. Every single pension owns the big banks, our biggest resource companies, including some in the oil sands. The profitability of these companies directly impacts the ability of the pensions to meet its obligation to union workers. Yet union leaders push policies that would restrict growth, restrict profitability of these companies, and hence hurt workers' pensions. You know, it wasn't long ago I heard a public sector union leader complain that some companies are increasing their dividend payouts. Didn't have a clue that a huge amount of those dividends end up in union pensions to help them pay the benefits. And let's be clear, public sector union elites are taking dead aim at resource companies and their unionized workers along with their pensions. The agenda of the public sector unions along with Unifor, with their anti-resource, anti-coal, anti-business stance, is an open attack on union workers, and for example, in the Yukon Buildings and Trades, on the United Steelworkers, on the International Union of Operating Engineers in Vancouver, and the International Longshore and Warehouse Union in Canada. No, it's a problem. There's not one unified, organized labor. Lastly, I've been warning about the dangers of technological substitution for ages. I got the hate mail to prove it. But it's slowly dawning on some private sector union leaders the challenge. What about the challenge with jobs? I mean, the recent dispute at the Port of Vancouver featured the fear of job loss due to technology. Big concern. Same thing with the recent FedEx dispute where the union was concerned about driverless trucks. So good for them. There's more to do on that front, that's for sure. But here's the message. Today, Labor Day weekend, for union workers who are listening, the world's changed, period. Failure to accept that that has profound consequences. There will be no job security, no pension security, no solutions at all in the old confrontational approaches of the 60s and the 70s and the 80s. The old anti-corporate rhetoric is not going to serve you. Happy Labor Day.